T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Jeff Passan
joining us. Jeff Passan is a buzzkill.
It's very passionate, as you can hear.
He dropped the bombshell.
MLB columnist for Yahoo Sports.
If they're spending more than $1.5 billion on something they don't understand well enough to do it and keep guys healthy, something is very wrong there.
New York Times best-selling author.
That was the thread that I pulled, and what ended up happening 350 pages later was this book.
Jeff Passan. Neil and Parkins on 670 The Score.
And our segment with Jeff Passan is brought to you by Walgreens. Hop right around the corner to Walgreens to fill your baskets with Easter must-haves like candy favorites, grass, plastic eggs, and toys. You'll find great deals and finish your Easter shopping in one trip at Walgreens. Author of The Arm, MLB columnist for Yahoo Sports, hosting Yahoo Sports MLB Opening Day Marathon, a live chat from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Central Time over at Yahoo, and a good buddy of mine, Jeff Passan, with us on The Score. Happy New Year, Jeff.
What's up, Park? How are you, buddy?
I'm doing very well, my friend.
Jeff, how's it going with you?
I'm good, Dan. How about yourself? Welcome back.
Thank you, sir. It's good to be back. It's good to be with the boy Wonder, too.
I don't know about that, but I appreciate the enthusiasm.
He's already lying to you, Passan. I'm looking forward to sparring with you for another baseball season. This will be our, what, fifth year doing radio together?
I don't know. I lost track after about 1 or 2 minutes, and it's just been downhill ever since.
Yeah, I understand. Well, I already have a bone to pick with you.
Let's hear it.
Well, last year, you picked Kyle Schwarber to be MVP, and he got sent to the damn minor leagues. And this year, you're picking the Cubs to win the World Series.
I know. You know what, though? 2 years ago, I picked the Cubs to win the World Series, too, and they actually did. So, like, give me a little bit of credit for that. I'm not a complete jinx. I have strayed from picking Schwarber to win MVP this year. And Schwarber's a very interesting case with my friends from childhood, because I grew up in Cleveland, and I'm in the 27th year of a fantasy league with my friends who I grew up with, and there was a motion made at the draft this year to ban Kyle Schwarber from being picked. Like, there is still such an enormous amount of hatred from Clevelanders toward Kyle Schwarber. And I was like, guys, he got sent to the freaking minors last year. Like, can you give the guy a break? And they are still so angry at him.
I like hearing that, actually.
I knew you would.
Yeah, I'm not mad at you anymore for that anecdote. But why? I mean, there's all these great teams. Why the Cubs this year for your World Series pick?
You know, I think that last year the hangover effect was real. And I hate to use that as an excuse, because it's a terrible excuse. And I think it showed a pretty distinct lack of focus there. But when it's all said and done, I think this team has a bunch of winners on it. And I know that's a really intangible thing to say, and I'm somebody who likes to quantify what he sees and what he hears and what he reads and really put value behind it. But I think the amount of talent plus the experience that the Cubs have, their rotation is incredibly deep. Their lineup, I still think, has a pretty significant amount of room for improvement, which says something when you've got the Bryants and Rizzos of the world. But I think Contreras can take that leap forward to start in this year. I think Javier Baez is on the track to doing the same thing. Addison Russell is going to be better. Ian Happ is the name I heard again and again from scouts this spring, saying a guy who they thought is really going to have a breakout year on offense this year. So when you compound all those things, look, the playoffs ultimately are such a crapshoot. But in the end, I'm going to go with talent, and I think the Cubs have the talent and the experience to do this.
Well, and there's a lot of optimism here in town, Jeff, as you might guess, and I don't know why there wouldn't be. Do you look at it as the way a lot of us do, that barring injuries for any extended period of time, this team should cruise through the National League Central and win 95, 97 games?
Yeah, I mean, we thought the same last year, though. And if you look at the division, I think the Pirates actually are probably going to be a little better than people recognize. I think the Cardinals are always there. The Brewers were, you know, breathing down the Cubs' necks for the majority of last season. And with Lorenzo Cain and Christian Yelich there, they've probably gotten better. And the loss of Jimmy Nelson for the majority, maybe the entirety of the season, makes the Brewers a little less intimidating. And their starting pitching is pretty iffy at this point. Mm-hmm. But they've got a ton of talent and a surplus of outfielders where they can probably go and get an arm or two if need be. So I think that the Brewers are going to be there, and I'm not sure that the Cubs are going to run away with the division like, say, the Astros are, the American League East, or the Indians probably will, the American League Central. But I do think they're probably going to have a fairly comfortable margin by the end of the season, in that they are certainly the overwhelming favorites to win the division, if not completely trash the rest of it.
Talking to Jeff Passan on the McNeil and Parkin Show, and we're going to do that every Wednesday at 3 o'clock during the baseball season. You mentioned some of the other favorites. Our producer, Nick Shepkowski, we think he really wants to run naked down Michigan Avenue. We're not sure, but he has pledged to run down naked down Michigan Avenue if anyone other than the Cubs, Yankees, Nationals, Dodgers, Astros, or Indians wins the World Series this year. So no Diamondbacks, no Red Sox, no Brewers, no Cardinals. How worried should he be that he might have to do the naked run?
I mean, Chris Sale is Chris Sale. David Price is healthy. Eduardo Rodriguez has looked really good. A bullpen with Joe Kelly and Brandon Workman and Craig Kimbrell at the back end, with Tyler Thornburg and Carson Smith maybe coming back, and a lineup that has Mookie Betts, Andrew Benintendi, Xander Bogaerts is poised for a breakout season, J.D. Martinez going there now. Like, I would legitimately be concerned about the Red Sox. And Nick, if you can chime in here, what the hell were you thinking not including the Red Sox? Were you just given six teams and you chose those six? Or did you exclude the Red Sox because you're the guy who's dumb enough to go running naked down Michigan Avenue just for jollies?
I'm just not as sold on their pitching. After you take out Chris Sale there, I am not sold on David Price being healthy or David Price of old. Pitching, I think, falls off there. I'm not as sold on their bullpen after Kimbrell. And J.D. Martinez, I know he was the best player in baseball post All-Star break last year. I don't think he continues that run.
And he sent the tweet before they got J.D. Martinez.
That's also true.
And we're holding him to it.
All right. I mean, I think it almost felt like J.D. Martinez going to Boston was an inevitability. I saw somebody this spring who told me Hanley Ramirez looks great, too. And so I think that the Red Sox offense has a chance to be a lot more dangerous than people realize. Rafael Devers is another guy who is just a pure hitter. And I think he's in line for a big season. The problem, Nick, with your logic there is that it doesn't necessarily take pitching depth to go out and win a World Series or to even get to a World Series. I mean, the way that the schedule is spread out, all you need is, you know, a decent starter and one or two decent relievers, and you can make it. Look at what the Cleveland Indians did pushing the Cubs to seven games, you know, on duct tape and twist ties a couple of years ago.
I want to ask you about one of those guys because you just wrote about him. And I've always been fascinated by Trevor Bauer. I think baseball needs characters. But that's Shep's brother, Trevor Bauer. They look just like each other. Tell our listeners how he is finding an interesting way to make some charitable contributions to the world.
It is a really nice story.
It's a nice story. Trevor Bauer is he's like the guy you find on Reddit threads who just essentially exists to, you know, to needle and annoy people. He's kind of just a troll. He happens to be able to throw a baseball remarkably well. And this year, as he was going into the arbitration process, He wanted to file his number at $6.9 million. He was told, however, that that was going to be a little bit too high. So he, you know, he was going over different iterations of where he should be. The way arbitration works in baseball is you put in a number for a salary that you want. The team counters with one, and then you go into a room and a three-panel arbitration panel decides it. And Trevor wanted his arbitration number to be $6,420,969.69, emphasis on the 420 and the 69. His agent and attorney told him it would probably not be a good idea to go into a room full of people wearing suits and present that number. And so he ended up filing at $6,525,000. But he really wants a salary of $6,420,969.69. So after he won the arbitration award of $6.525 million, he decided that he was going to do a charitable giveaway called the 69 Days of Giving, where he's giving $420.69 to different charities every day for the next 68 days. And on the 69th day, we'll be giving a lump sum of $69,420.69 to a charity of his choice. And on his website, which is BauerOutage.com, anybody from Cleveland or otherwise can nominate a charity to participate and to receive the bountiful gift of $420.69. And so the 69 Days of Giving campaign starts tomorrow, and it is one of the, I believe I called it benevolence trolling. Mm-hmm. And it's a pretty cool thing to see, but you just sort of sit there and chuckle at it like, God, how did a 13-year-old become a professional baseball player?
You were born to write that story, by the way. You really were.
I was sitting there last night as I was doing it, just like I was chuckling like Beavis and Butthead to myself. I was just sitting there and just the whole time. Just 69-420. It was great.
How do the Indians feel about that? Is it just innocent stuff for a young kid having fun embracing a soon-to-be green-friendly nation?
I believe that the Indians were okay with it because at least he's given something away. I mean, that's the whole part about this. You can look at him and say, What a weirdo, or what a, you know, what a troll. But in the end, he's going to be giving away close to $100,000 to charities. And it's difficult to sit there and say to someone who's giving away $100,000, you're doing it the wrong way. $100,000 is $100,000. And if you're giving it to causes, and not just giving it to causes, but ones that, that you might not know about because people out there are informing you, and ones that you might be able to, through your platform doing this, give greater acclaim to people who otherwise might not know about them. I think ultimately, despite the way that it's coming across, it's a very good thing.
Jeff Passan of Yahoo Sports joining us. How would you define success for the White Sox this year?
That's a great question. I think success is twofold for the White Sox, because I think if the White Sox end up going 81-81, it would not surprise me.
Yeah.
I'm pretty bullish on the White Sox, not just in the future, but right now. I think they have a chance to be pretty decent this year. And I know their starting rotation is not quite what people see as a high-quality major league rotation at this point. But I think that their lineup has a chance to really do some damage. And once the kids start coming, and this is the year, I think, in which they're going to start coming, they got a chance to be good.
It's also a lousy division, though, too. It's got to be part of it.
That's a big part of it. You know, I think 81-81 is a possibility. It's not going to be a disappointment if they don't reach it. I also think the big thing for them this year is to see if a guy like Moncada is going to cut down on his strikeouts. and to see if a guy like Kopech is going to cut down on his blocks, and to see if a guy like Giolito can go through a full season looking as good as he did in spring training. And I'll tell you, Lucas Giolito looked awesome this spring. And that's the exciting part for the White Sox. You know, they're so deep down there. And even when you have an injury like Luis Roberts, we still didn't establish, is it Robert or Robert? Or what is it, Danny?
We're going with Luis Robert.
Luis Robert, okay.
Yeah.
When you have an injury like his, as disappointing as that was, I'm still really excited to see what Alec Hampton can do. And I'm still really excited to see Moncada and to see just this surfeit of prospects that they have and what they can be. And we're going to start seeing that. I mean, Eloy Jimenez is going to be a big league outfielder for probably a pretty significant amount of time this year. I'm excited to see what that looks like.
And I know a lot of White Sox fans are too. By the way, were you just getting out of a rental car? What was going on there?
No, my kid got in the car and he forgot to close the door.
Okay.
So he's being nice. He's being quiet, though. You know, he's behaving. You got to do dad stuff, like pick up your kids at school in the middle of a radio interview. It's great.
Tell Jack I say hello and tell him the story of Trevor Bauer once we get off the phone. So I'm curious about, like, the powers of the
Parkins, he just looked at me and said, is it related to a drone?
Wow. Good pull. Good pull by your son. He still got it. Are the powers that be in Major League Baseball concerned that it feels like there are seven teams that can win the World Series and a bunch of people are just not trying?
If they are, they're not telling me. I think they should be. But I think that I'll tell you what numbers I'm looking at this year that to me are going to be a lot more indicative than winning percentage, than OPS, than ERA. The numbers I'm looking at this year are attendance. I want to see if this large amount of tanking that's going on has a demonstrable effect on attendance. Because the only thing that's going to change this is if people stop going to the ballpark. So long as fans are going to watch these garbage excuses for major league teams that are being put out there right now in Miami, for example, and in other places, then you know what? They're going to keep doing that because the incentive is there for them professionally and financially to tank so long as it doesn't affect their bottom line. Now, if attendance crumbles in some of these places, maybe all of a sudden they're going to realize, hey, we need to put out a representative major league team, and then that changes the calculus of this, and you almost see a reverberation going where they recognize they can't do business this way. But until they're shown that, I don't think they're going to do anything differently, and I don't think Major League Baseball is inclined to be all that concerned about it, which to me is pretty problematic because I know there are going to be a hell of a lot of games I watch this summer that are going to be between two teams that just don't look like big league teams.
Yeah, no question, and it's very NBA-ish.
It sure is.
You know, and it's a complaint in the NBA. Now, the NBA's ratings are going up, and it hasn't hurt their business, so maybe it will prove to not affect the bottom line, but
here's the problem with baseball. The NBA's ratings are going up, not because the NBA suddenly has this wash of competitiveness. No, the NBA is as one-sided as ever. The NBA's ratings are going up because they have a bunch of really interesting, unique, individual characters. Major League Baseball's star-making machine sucks.
Yep.
It is nothing like the NBA. Major League Baseball would love to have the 10th or 15th most popular NBA player. I mean, let's just go down the list of guys who would be the most popular player in Major League Baseball, right? Or who are more popular than the most popular guy in baseball right now. I mean, LeBron, Russell Westbrook. I think Joel Embiid is up there.
Harden, Durant, Curry, Giannis.
Yeah, exactly. Let's put it this way. Who's the most popular Major League Baseball player right now?
Bryce Harper.
Probably Bryce Harper.
Yeah. Probably. And look, I think there's something to that. I think he earns it because he's a really good player, but Bryce Harper, in terms of just marketing, is nowhere close to any of those guys. And so I don't think baseball has the individual stars to save it like the NBA does. And I don't think it's going to have them anytime soon either.
I agree with you. Jeff, we look forward to talking throughout the season, man. You do great work, and I'll talk to you next week.
Looking forward to it, boys. Take care.
Thanks, right. Jeff.
That's Jeff Passan of Yahoo Sports. Terrific columnist, insider. He'll break stories, and he'll be on the McNeil and Parkin Show Wednesdays at 3 o'clock. We can't do it at 4 o'clock, but there are some notable anniversaries that we need to recognize and commend. The big one in Chicago as well. It's coming up on The Score.
It is a beautiful 86-degree day in the Windy City of Chicago, and indoors it is heating up. Chicago fans looking to tonight as a coronation of the champion bull, so the home club will be greeted with hysteria.
Here's Carson for three. Carson with the rebound. Tie running down. The Chicago Bulls have won the NBA championship for the second straight season.
Bulls' second title in 1992. Audio brought to you by Tomorrow Sleep. Want an awesome night's sleep? Try a new Tomorrow Hybrid mattress designed by sleep experts at Serta Simmons. Use code DRIVE for $125 off at tomorrowsleep.com.
Yeah, it's the birthday of the old Chicago Stadium today. The stadium which hosted only one Bulls title. That one right there against Portland in 92. Stadium was opened on this day in 1929 for a heavyweight title fight. The participants, nobody would know their names. But I just thought we should acknowledge one of the great buildings of all time. One of the great dumps of all time.
Yeah, I mean, my memories of it, I was young, obviously. But I remember hockey there, actually, more than basketball. Most of my Jordan memories were in the United Center, but the Eddie Belfour chants. I remember going to Blackhawks games with my dad and him hearing the Belfour chant, Eddie, and thinking that was the coolest thing in the world. And my dad being like, we gotta, you know, walking in from the car to the stadium or through the neighborhood or going from a restaurant or whatever it was like, hold my hand.
Yes.
Don't let go of my hand as we walk from the car to the stadium. And I was like, okay. I didn't really understand why,
yeah.
But I remember that was the rule when he went there.
There was an era when you didn't want to be walking outside around the stadium
during
the daytime. That era passed, thankfully, and thankfully we have the United Center now. I love the United Center. But the stadium housed so many wonderful things, and I think we romance the experiences in it more than the building. But there were some things unique to that barn that we don't have with the United Center. The proximity to the ice or the court would be high on the list. It was a very intimate experience, and opposing players, especially NHL players, always said, worst place to play. Hated playing against the Hawks at the old barn.
Because of how close people were?
Yeah, it was loud.
The noise.
It was loud, yeah. It was only 18,472 exactly every time they played, but it was loud.
I also remember feeling like there was just a lot of secondhand smoke. Like, really, a lot of smoke in the rafters.
Nowhere to go.
Yeah, no ventilation or anything like that.
It was a dump. It was our dump, though. The organ loft made it cool. I think a lot of Blackhawks fans would say, I miss the organ loft. Put Frank Pelico out among the commoners.
Do you have a favorite event that you attended there?
It wouldn't be the Ted Nugent concert I saw in 78. He was awful that night. Probably my first Blackhawks game, 1972. Blackhawks 6, the LA Kings nothing.
Nice. Tanny, Shep, you're like my age. Do you have many memories at all?
I mean, I remember watching the Bulls there, watching
yeah.
Hawks games there, but I was only ever in that building one time. It was the December of 1993, a Bulls Heat game where the Bulls came back from 15 down in the fourth quarter to win. That's the only time I ever stepped foot in that building. So, like actual personal memories, that it starts and ends right there.
Tanny?
And I basically grew up in that 300 level watching the Blackhawks, ironically. That was a big part of my childhood when I was like 8, 9, 10, when the Hawks had, you know, JR and Belfour. They were like gods to me. And you learn a lot about life sitting up in that 300 level with that clientele up there. So you do a lot of growing up. You learn what to do, what not to do, how not to act, how to act in public. So, I mean, remember those staircases, getting back to it being a dump.
Yep.
Walking down those staircases after, you know, hopefully a Hawks win. I never saw Jordan play there, but I just love it. You know, Frank Pelico's Oregon, just great times at the old barn.
Yeah, we all like Frank's Oregon. The what he's calling the 300 level was the old second balcony. Now we call it the 300 level in the United Center, but it was the old second balcony club. And we, many of us, were so nostalgic and so sad when it became time for that building to meet its demise. 1 year into the United Center, I just couldn't believe what was all the fuss about. Look at all this creature comfort. Look at room to go to the restroom and lounges and all of the things that you never dreamed of in a sports facility.
No, I remember the backlash to the United Center. Like, just remember that when it opened, people were convinced the rims were off at the United Center, and the rims were like too tight, and they're like, they messed up the rims, and they're going to ruin Jordan. And the old stadium was a parking lot, and it was just sacrilege at the time. But then, of course, skyboxes, and it made it a lot better.
Yeah, my first time seeing Jordan there was 85, and wow. I was so stoked to see Jordan play in person for the first time. And they were playing the Pacers, and Mike got hurt in the first quarter and missed the rest of the game. So more Blackhawks memories for me, but I know a lot of people really loved that place. I'm so glad we've got new stuff, right?
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a picture of the stadium framed in my Hall of Fame room, but I don't clamor for those days.
Yeah.
Era passed.
Right. The old stadiums that you hold on to, really, I mean, Wrigley and Fenway, right? And you don't even like Fenway. Like, there's just it. Comforts are nice.
It's the memories made in it, I think, sure. As much as anything.
Sure.
As the building itself.
Couple Jordan memories today, actually. It's the 23rd anniversary of when he dropped the double nickel on the Knicks. And also many years before when he scored 69 points in a game. That happened on this day as well. Okay. So a couple of notable Michael Jordan games.
That was Trevor Bauer's favorite Michael Jordan game, the 69.
Yeah. Yes, it was.
We got to get him on.
Trevor Bauer?
Yes.
Yeah, he's an interesting cat. Tanny, go ahead. The last goal ever scored by the Hawks in the stadium?
Correct, because they were shut out in their last game ever in the stadium. So this was the 94 Stanley Cup playoffs. Jeremy Roenick here walks it off, and they would go to Toronto and then bring the series back to Chicago where they would get shut out. So no final goal in that last game, but it is the last one scored for the Blackhawks.
Now Roenick, Amani, and Murphy against Eastwood, Vanderbilt, and Pearson for the Leafs. Here's the draw. Todd Gill under pressure from Amani. Popped it up. Amani put it around the boards. Taken by Ellick. And he flies it out to center ice. Keith Kearney. That is pass deflected. And he's corralled by Weinrich. Bouncing one over the Leaf line. Murphy picked out a net.
Performance by this team. They look tired. Down and out, it looks like. Down 3-2. But somehow they found a way. A key power play goal and an early overtime win.
Did the kid pick a pretty good time for his first playoff goal? Listen to the crowd. They're all on their feet. Nobody's left. The old gray lady on West Madison Street.
The old gray lady.
What a great call. A lot of history in that call right there. That was pretty cool.
Most of it good. That was the day. That was an era when Jeremy Roenick and Tony Amonte still talked to each other. That changed a little while down the road. But, yeah, how about some of the names we heard in there, too? Eric Weinrich, number two, the only Roanoke, Virginia native ever to wear an NHL uniform, I'm assuming. Who else do we? Keith Kearney, number four in that highlight. That's good stuff. Pat Foley on the call.
Yeah, I was going to say, Pat Foley's still on the call there. That's very cool. We have Can't Do It coming up at 4 o'clock. At some point, I would like to say what the Bulls can still accomplish in the last 8 games, because something crazy has been happening since we all stopped paying attention.
There's more hope.
There's a little bit of hope. I got a crazy scenario I was working out with Cody before the show that I want to lay out for you. It's coming up. McNeil and Park, it's on the Score. 15 minutes until Can't Do It. McNeil and Parkins on the Score, brought to you by Firestone Complete Auto Care. Firestone Complete Auto Care, keeping cars running newer, longer. Whatever you drive, drive a Firestone. So, I know that most people have tuned out our winter sports tenants right now, and deservedly so, and frankly, for the most part, I have as well. But it's time for the home stretch, and the Bulls can actually accomplish something fairly remarkable in the last 8 games of the season.
It's a dubious way of being remarkable, but yes, remarkable nonetheless.
Yes, because I thought for sure when the league office came down on the Bulls and said, stop what you're doing, you got to play Lopez and Holiday, I was like, all right, they're too good to get a top five pick on merit, because some of the teams below them are legitimately awful. But the Bulls are finding ways to lose these games in spectacular fashion, and I think that they're fabricating injuries, which makes me – I'm just so proud. I don't think Denzel Valentine is hurt, and he's not playing. And Lowry Marketing comes back and drops 22, and then they pull him from a game. And Dunn's got his thing. Oh, his knee's a little bulky or whatever. They've lost 6 games in a row. They've got 8 to go. Right now they're in the 8 spot. But there are – Brooklyn only has 1 fewer win. The Magic only have 2 fewer wins. They're tied with the Kings, and the Mavericks are only 1 game back also in the win columns.
Okay.
So all of those teams are right there. So right now they pick 8. And in the NBA for the lottery, if you tie with a team, it's not like on conference record or head-to-head or anything like that. The team that gets the more ping pong balls is literally determined by a coin flip. So a tie is a really valuable thing. Then you get a 50-50 shot to get the better pick in the draft. So here are the easy ones, all right? If the Bulls lose out, all right?
This is such a foreign concept.
I get it.
Let's go over the schedule and look at all the games we can lose.
Yes. Well, hey, they can't accomplish anything by winning
them. I understand.
Right? They can't accomplish, and it's the last year with this current lottery system where you're absolutely incentivized to you know what I mean? It's the last year of it. So may as well take advantage. 8 games left. 2 of them are against the Nets, so that's easy. You lose both of those games, the Nets pass you. Boom.
That's easy.
That one's easy.
We can lay down for them.
Right. One of them is against the Magic. All right? So if the Magic lose, and they're 2 games back for you in the win column, so then the Magic would only need to win 1 game against the Knicks, Nets, Mavericks, or Hawks, who are all awful, to get to a place where they're now tied with the Bulls. The Kings are tied with the Bulls. And they've got the Lakers, the Grizzlies, and the Suns. The Suns are the worst team in the league, if not for the Grizzlies. The Kings have both of them left on the schedule. And the Mavericks, only 1 game back in the win column, have the Lakers, Magic, and Suns. They only need to win 1 of those to get into the coin flip. So the moral of the story here is, Mac, if the Bulls lose out, that will be 14 consecutive losses to end the season. They will finish 24-58. And if the Mavericks could figure out a way to get 2 of 3 against the Lakers, Magic, and Suns, the Kings get 1 of the Lakers, Grizzlies, and Suns, and the Magic get 1, in addition to their Bulls game, of the Mavericks, Hawks, Knicks, and Nets, the Bulls get the 4th pick in the draft. Boom! Michael Porter, welcome to Chicago.
That changes everything for
everything. 4th pick versus 8th pick. And by the way, the lottery is in Chicago, so the league's probably going to rig it for the Bulls to get the number 1 overall pick anyway. But it's easier under the guise of cover if you've got the 4th most best chance, right? It's not that crazy to go from the 4th pick to the 1st pick, but going from the 8th or 9th pick to the 1st pick, that's...
So if they make your dream come true...
Yeah, and lose out.
Run the table, so to speak.
Yeah.
14 consecutive losses to end the year. Would that be a franchise record? It would have to be, wouldn't it? I don't think the Bulls have ever lost 14 in a row before.
I don't know the answer
to
that.
I'll take all the NBA research, Shep.
Yeah, I figure that'd be... I mean, they started the year 3-20 this year, but I don't think there was a stretch quite as long as 14 straight.
They're not going to lose 14 straight.
I mean, the Nets are awful and the Magic's awful.
Well, that's the thing. There are other clubs they're lining up against who have the same desire.
I know, but I'm telling you, this new commitment to tanking that they're doing by making up injuries, and I have no proof that they're making up these injuries, obviously, but it just, I mean, that's so valid.
Well, the league's been asking about injuries, so, you know, why wouldn't people suspect they're on the up and up?
Well, I was talking with Cody, and he's like, because he's still watching every game and going to every game and doing a great job for us on the website and all these other places. He'll be a great Bulls beat reporter one day if he wants to be. You know, he's like, Denzel Valentine played 20-something minutes in a game, finished a game, and then 2 days later, all of a sudden, he's got a knee issue, and he's out of the game.
Well, like, 26 minutes will drain a guy.
I guess so. Like, I guess they're making stuff up, or maybe they're not. I don't know. But lose out. Accomplish your dreams. It's a race to the bottom, Mac. Get on board. Tanking. It's in vogue.
Yeah, I know. I know it's the NBA's way of doing business. It is just so counterintuitive to everything that is being a fan or being competitive.
It's baseball's way of doing it too. It's sports' way. It's the new normal in sports that it's understood and commonly accepted that the worst place you could be is in the middle. Worst thing you can be in the NFL is 8-8.
How much better is 4 than, say, 7? Is it a radical difference with what? Because there's 5 guys, right? 5 guys who are so-called can't-miss prospects.
I mean, people have differing opinions on this draft. Some people think it'll be as deep as last year's. Some people think it's DeAndre Ayton and Luka Doncic and nobody else, you know? And then it's just a bunch of role players. So, to me, that's a separate conversation. Like, Garpax have the best chance of getting the best player the higher up they pick in the draft. It's harder to find a great player at eight or nine than it is at 3 or 4, and it's easiest to find a great player at 1. Like, that's just for any executive. That's how it works. So why not, in the last year where it's incentivized like this, make it as easy as possible on your general managers to find the best player in this draft? And don't forget, they have the Pelicans pick, so if they get the 4th or 5th pick, and the Pelicans pick is whatever it's going to end up being, they're the 5 seed in the West right now, so say it's the 21st pick or something like that, you could trade that pick, move up even higher. I'm telling you, man, I should be GM for the Bulls and the Bears.
Oh, God. I mean, Theo's got
the Cubs under control. I will concede that. But I got Odell Beckham coming to the Bears, and I got Michael Poole. I got a scenario.
You want to help Stan Bowman while you're at it?
No, I don't know enough about hockey. I think I got the Bulls.
Just keep getting high draft picks, and the Hawks will be fine under your direction, because you'll draft Taves and Kane again, and it'll be another dynasty here in another decade or so. So that's all you have to do. January 8th to February 6th, 2001, the Bulls' record for consecutive losses, 16 in a row.
Oh, history 16. Is coming, boys.
Wow.
We're going to see history, Mac.
That's something to aspire to.
They can do it.
Yeah.
And the games are on the road, Miami and Orlando the next two. Back to back? Oh, yeah. Got a couple losses coming. It's very exciting.
It's so bad.
It's great.
It's awful.
It's so bad, it could be good. Kind of the motto for this show. All right, we got Can't Do It coming up. 312-644-6767. You know how the game is played. One question to one host. No follow-ups. Maybe you've heard us bite our tongue. You want us to go a little further? Maybe you got some questions. Mac is back. It's only his second time ever playing Can't Do It. 312-644-6767. If you get us to say Can't Do It, you get a prize. It's that simple. It's Can't Do It next on The Score.
Can't do it.
Can't do it.
You can't do it.
On 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.